This is the BBC.
This podcast is supported by advertising outside the UK.
Hey guys, I'm Nadia.
And I'm Shabazz. We're just popping up with some essential news.
The brand new series of Doctor Who has begun.
And that means the official Doctor Who podcast is here.
Whether you're a Whovian or a Newvian, you are so welcome. This is the place where we dissect every episode, explain all the Easter eggs, and bring you some exclusive content too.
Plus, we'll have fabulous special guests and Doctor Who mega fans.
So come and find us. It's the official Doctor Who podcast.
Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.
Across Northern Ireland, on your radio, and on BBC Sounds. This is
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Well, the Education Minister, Paul Given, in the Nolan studio today. There may be an election, but Assembly business goes on. All of those different departments, are they delivering? Well, we'll certainly try to ask those tough questions of them. So the Minister, Paul Given, announcing key information around what he intends to do with one of the big ones, school uniform policy, and lots of other stuff coming up on this interview this morning.
The Stephen Nolan Show!
Good morning. Thank you for joining us today. 9:05, the Education Minister, Paul Given, is in the studio. Big questions for this Minister this morning. Yes, we will look. He's over 100 days in post now. Doesn't matter whether there's an election or not. These people are still in our country. Assembly business continues. Things need to be done. So what's he done? What hasn't he done? What's he going to do? Minister, good morning.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Thank you for coming into the studio. So, look, we of course you want to talk about things that you have done already, but front and centre of the news cycle at the moment is that there is not enough money for many different ministers to do what they want to do. And then that rolls into other services. We see the police warning us that we may lose entire services within policing because of their strain on their budget. So you're projecting what? A couple of hundred million of an overspend?
Well, the executive, you're right, is facing huge challenges in terms of the resources that are available to it, both on the capital side for new bills and also on your day-to-day running in terms of salaries and those type of services. And every department faces those pressures. And I recognise that that exists in other important departments throughout the executive, and ministerial colleagues have articulated that. We did secure, yes, additional funding as a result of Stormont being restored. We needed more. The party made that clear at the time that it needed to be more. But we have to get on with the job of what we've got and continue to make progress with the Treasury, which we have done through this interim fiscal framework, and that is releasing some additional funding. But my own department, after the budget settlement, is on a projected overspend of £225 million, which is a very significant amount of funding that isn't available to me. And I'm making an assessment as to what that means. I've commissioned an exercise within my department, the Education Authority, and some of our other smaller arm's length bodies as to what a 10% reduction in services would look like.
And that's what I'm trying to establish, what that would look like, so that the citizens of this country, the listeners to this show, can have an input into how they feel about what they're going to lose.
Well,
so you can't take out staff, can you? And that's the majority of your cost on that.
And the staff are the most important part of delivering an effective education system. They're what makes the magic in a classroom, and the support staff. And that accounts for 80% of my budget. The overall figure of salary costs for the civil service is 57%. For me, it's 80%.
Are you considering any redundancies?
Well, if redundancies were to take place, that would be hundreds of staff, but that requires an upfront in order to remove staff, and we can't remove them because we need them. So that isn't going to be an option that I want to take forward.
So where's the 10% saving coming from, Paul?
Well, when you look at the expenditure that we have, a lot of it has got statutory protection. So you would need to change the law, for example, to change around free school meals. Home-to-school transport accounts for over £100 million a year is spent transporting our children through buses, taxis. But these things are underpinned by statute. when a child has a statement of educational need that entitles them to a classroom assistant, by law, that provision needs to be put in place.
Would you want to change the legislation?
Well, no, because all of those things are very important. That's why they're protected by law. So whenever I receive the assessment, I know already that the only way to bring my department in budget would be to take forward legislation, which is unlikely this year in any event, which would actually cause harm to some of our most vulnerable in society. So I'm faced with huge challenges for the Department of Education. I want to crystallise what that actually looks like. I raised this on a one-to-one meeting with the Finance Minister earlier this week. I outlined the huge challenges that we have because there will be funding available in the June monitoring round at the end of next month. And I am going to make the case as to why education needs to be given a very significant allocation to protect that statutory provision that we have education.
But as a statement of fact, what is out there? You might not want to do it. You might not end up doing it. But what is out there that does not have that legal protection of what you have to do that therefore could be vulnerable?
Well, you look at schemes, which I would want to do. Some of it was to do with helping people with even counselling services around mental health. Whenever I look at some of the work that we put into the department around youth work, you know, they're not protected by law, but they carry out very important work in our society. They're engaging with some of the most difficult areas.
Are they vulnerable in this 10% cut?
Well, they're not protected by law. And therefore, you officials will use the language like me, what has got statutory protection and what's regarded as discretionary spend because it's not underpinned by law in terms of those services. So I have given that commission work to provide an analysis as to what 10% reduction would look like. You look at the allocation even towards schools and how much each pupil is worth to a school. What that should that figure be in order to come in budget? But that would mean reducing schools' budgets. And half of our schools are already in deficit. So I don't want to compound that problem. But this speaks to the wider challenge that I have to deliver a world-class education system without having the sufficient resources available to me. But I also recognise colleagues around that table, the Department of Health, are making the case for their department. But we as an executive need to look at the totality of what we're doing. And education is facing a very difficult period ahead. But I will still on with the job.
There are going to be cuts. Is that realistic?
Well, I don't think it's unreasonable for a department as big as mine that is spending 2.7, 2.8 billion to believe that there is a way to do things more efficiently.
So there are going to be cuts in services rather than efficiency.
Well, I think it's inevitable that you would have cuts given...
In services?
Yes, given the pressures that are on the department for me to come in on budget within the next 9 months. I can't envisage how we would get through this financial year without there being a reduction in services. So
that could be a cut in youth services. Is that what you're saying?
Well, at this stage, I have my officials that are carrying out that assessment. That will then come to me in terms of what options are there. I think some of these options are wholly unpalatable, but I will also then present that information to my executive colleagues to outline that if we don't get additional support, this will be the downstream effect. And I would hope that my colleagues will listen to that. And whenever it comes to the funding allocation that's available, that the Department of Education will receive its fair share.
Because there's so much to get through today. But as what you're saying this morning, am I summing this up correctly, that you can't touch those services where you have a legal obligation to provide the service? You do not have a legal obligation to provide mental health counselling to children, youth services, and so therefore you don't want to do it, but it's vulnerable if you don't get the money. Is that accurate?
Well, that is where I absolutely don't want to go. But if you're looking at what is protected in law and what is not protected in law, well, then that is correct. That's what I've outlined in terms of some of the areas that we face huge challenges in.
You mentioned there, Paul, the June monitoring round. So what that basically is that's just a time in the year where the government looks at how much money has it got? And suddenly, all of a sudden, we've got, what, a couple of £100 million of extra money in June? Is that right?
Well, I don't know how much is going to be available. The finance minister has indicated that there is some resource. But partly,
a couple of $100 million, isn't it?
Well,
all of a sudden.
The government need to provide their main estimates process, and we hope as an executive to get that information. And at that stage, we will know exactly what is available. But we have secured additional funding through the interim fiscal framework. That has released £24 million. That will be available to us. And there are Barnett consequentials as a result of some of the announcements in England, which will come to Northern Ireland, that will be available in June monitoring. The precise figure on that, we don't know yet. But there will be some funding available. And that's why I'm making it clear, education is under huge challenge and pressure, and we need to support that. We also need to make sure, because we were very successful as an executive in resolving industrial action. We dealt with the teachers' pay dispute. They got a significant uplift, which I have to baseline into schools' budgets. And I will do that, so that we can continue funding those pay rises. And one of the big achievements that we were able to secure for young people in Northern Ireland, you know, we want them to stay. We don't want them to look elsewhere. But in England, you could get paid £30,000 a year as a newly qualified teacher. In Northern Ireland, it was £24,000. And we were losing people. Now, as a result of the intervention that I made in those negotiations, new recruits get £30,000. And I've already met young people who have said to me, I'm now not looking at leaving Northern Ireland because I can get 30,000 in Northern Ireland. And that is a significant achievement. And we are still making progress. Even though we're difficult challenges, there are significant things that we have taken forward.
You say, Minister, that teachers' pay sorted, but of course, educational support workers' pay is not sorted. And they are on this programme on a regular basis, telling us of the vital job they're doing and what an incredible job they do, and yet they can't afford to go to work.
And I have met so many in my own constituency over the years. You know, they do hugely important work. They are our support staff in our schools, the cooks, the cleaners, the bus drivers, the classroom assistants. And
are they underpaid?
Well, I believe that they are. So
you're going to sort it?
I have met with the unions on a number of occasions. I support the business case. I approved the business case. I put it forward to the Minister for Finance. She also supported it. The executive supports this being resolved, and we've been engaging with the Treasury as recently as this week. I know that my colleague, the Finance Minister, spoke directly to the Chief Secretary at the Treasury about this, and we are awaiting a Treasury response in order for us to resolve the pay and grading issue. But what I would say,
they've been promised money, haven't they?
We support.
How galling is it to have a pay deal agreed and they don't get their money?
So we support the pay and grading review. But what I would say, the unions went on strike to support the executive making the case to the Treasury. We now have a general election. So now, in my view, is not the time to be on strike. And I would appeal to the unions to think again about their strike action that they're planning for June. Because I do support the support workers. I do believe they aren't paid sufficiently. They have got pay rises over the last year. There was an 8% pay rise. In this next financial year, there will be another pay rise because they are part of a national negotiating committee, and I am obliged to do that. But it is starting at a lower base than what it should be. So I do believe they're underpaid. I do believe we have a recruitment and retention issue, and I want to get this resolved.
But you've spoken, Minister, about overspends. Why not overspending them?
Well,
you've got the power to do it, don't you? You could say, I'm giving you what you deserve. I'm giving you what was agreed to you.
Well, we can't overspend because part of the condition upon which the Treasury gave the executive hundreds of millions of additional money, we don't believe it's still enough based on need. But one of the conditions was that we would deliver a balanced budget. And if we are not capable as an executive to deliver that budget, then we put at jeopardy funding from the Treasury. So, you know, you always have to take decisions. And we as an executive do need to be responsible. But we have to weigh up the priorities. And for me, one of my priorities is resolving the pay and grading.
Words don't matter. It's whether they get the money.
It is. And listen, I've outlined that.
So when do you think they'll get the money?
Well, we're waiting on the Treasury to respond because we need to get that support to do it. There isn't the funding within the executive.
Well, there is. It's about the executive choosing where to put the money. So there is the money if the executive chooses.
It is important just to make the distinction. This is about a pay and grading review around recruitment and retention. So I do believe support staff are not paid sufficiently. They did get a pay rise last year. They will get another pay rise this year. I believe it should be more. That's why I support the pay and grading review, so that we can retain and recruit. Because I listened to your show. I listened to the classroom assistant who's given decades of service saying that she is actively looking for another job. I can't afford to lose people like that who are deeply invested in a profession. So that's why I support the recruitment and retention being resolved.
There's so much to talk about today, as I said, but finally on that, it is May. Do you envisage those educational support workers getting an answer as to whether they will get that money that's already been agreed before when? Before the end of this year?
Well, I would like to think we'll get a response before the end of this year from Treasury. And in order to try and get that response, I was in London earlier this week at a World Educational event. I took the opportunity to engage with the government. I met with Hilary Benn, and if the polls are right, we'll be looking at a Labour government.
Did you raise it with them?
I did. I outlined in detail why I would want, if it was a Labour government, for them to support this pay and grading review and provide us the support and the resources. Well, he had every sympathy with what I was saying.
Okay.
And so we are engaging. We are using what influence we can. And my appeal is, the unions are working with us. Please don't go on strike again before we can get this resolved, because I am hopeful that we can get it resolved.
We're going on strike next month. You're asking them to call that strike off next month.
I have said that during the current strike that I didn't believe that they should be, and I would hope that they don't continue with that.
You say you listen to the programme year after year. Way back to the days I was in City Beat, I was hearing from parents from working class areas, and a brand on a school uniform, a brand on a PE kit, what meant that their child couldn't participate, meant they felt they're not good enough. And for those parents, it is absolutely devastating. What are you going to do about it?
Well, I'll be putting out to consultation within weeks proposals to move the current guidance, which is strong, but it is guidance, onto a statutory footing to give it legal underpinning. So that consultation will seek views on that. The outworking of that, if it is supported, will be to bring legislation into the Assembly in order to give that guidance a statutory basis. But I haven't sat and waited to do that. I got my department's permanent secretary to formally write to all of the principals outlining the importance of them following the guidance, because if every school, and a lot of schools do follow the guidance, but if every school followed that guidance, it wouldn't be necessary to go down this route.
John O'Dowd was saying that to me years ago. Should schools who don't follow that guidance be ashamed of themselves?
Well, I think it's wholly unacceptable that any parent is unable to send a child to a school because they're not in a position to afford those costs. And it's uniform. It's also PE kits, and you may be in various different teams. It's also different ties if you happen to be a prefect, and there's lots of things that add to the cumulative cost of school uniforms, and there is a disparity in how much it costs in some schools. So I'll move consultation within weeks, move towards bringing forward legislation, but it's also important then...
Would that legislation possibly, are you consulting on the possibility of putting a financial cap on the cost of a school uniform?
So I'm going to ask that question as to how could we have a cap? Because it isn't something that is in place in the Republic of Ireland or in the rest of the United Kingdom. So this would be something new, and we need to understand how can we do this. So I'll be asking that question. I'll also be looking to how you actually monitor statutory guidance.
And how do you punish schools that aren't adhering?
Of course, I don't want to punish schools. I want them to do the right thing, and the overwhelming majority do. So I will be looking at a role for the inspection teams to monitor how schools and report back to me where there are breaches of that guidance taking place.
But the possibility, what you're saying is you're launching this consultation in the next couple of weeks, and within it will be looking at legislation, the possibility of legislation to put a financial cap on school uniform.
Yes, I will be. That will issue before the end of the school term. So within weeks, I'll be putting out to consultation the issues around uniform cost.
You mentioned school inspections there. Of course, lots of schools have not been cooperating with school inspections, short of strike action.
So over the past number of years, action short of strike, which has been rather than closing a school down, that has been the process that unions have engaged in, and that resulted in a non-cooperation of school inspections. And I'm pleased that as a result of resolving the teachers' pay, that inspections are now being stood up, and we have seven schools who volunteered and wanted to be inspected, because this is an opportunity to view how they operate and learn from that and improve.
Or name and shame them, it could be looked upon.
Well, I don't want to name and shame schools. And so we have actually co-designed a new inspection model working with unions and stakeholders. And this is being piloted in these seven schools with the view to rolling that out in September.
There was something you mentioned just at the top of the interview there, where you said that some schools are in deficit. The clear inference is some schools are in surplus.
Yes.
Are there many?
Yes, it's roughly an even split, where we have half the schools in deficit, some in significant deficit, and we've other schools with surplus, and some schools have significant surpluses.
So how do some schools have significant surpluses? How does that work?
Well, there's been guidance to say that a school shouldn't be more than 5% above in terms of the budget that they get allocated, because the reason a school gets funding is to spend it. And The funding formula model has various component parts to it. One of them would be free school meals, which is a guide to where an area requires maybe additional support. Typically, high free school meals is where a community has disadvantage and there are greater needs. And so the formula helps to assist schools in those communities. And that is funding that is there to provide additional support that isn't provided to other schools. It's a bit of a crude instrument, but that's the purpose behind it. I obviously expect schools, when they receive funding, to spend that funding.
So are you telling me that there is a significant number of schools in socially deprived areas sitting on surpluses that they haven't spent for those children?
Well, I wouldn't overplay that there's a significant number, but there are schools that do have surpluses. There are some that I regard as significant, and that is funding that they receive to support pupils. It isn't to save up for a rainy day.
But that's what they're doing.
5 years down the line. And therefore,
is that what they're doing?
I encourage schools where they have those surpluses to ensure that it is being spent on those pupils in the here and now, as opposed to thinking we may be under financial difficulty in 3 or 4 years' time, so we better save that funding.
But Paul, that's a significant story in itself. So there are schools in Northern Ireland where kids really need that leg up, they don't have the best of start in life, and the school is not spending the money. How can the schools justify that?
Well, I am going to re-engage a review of the common funding formula so that we take a wider look at how that is calculated, because there are some schools that are at full enrolment, but yet they're operating in a deficit scenario. And I don't think that should be happening in those scenarios. So I am going to look at the wider issue of the funding formula. But you know, there is good work that has been taking place in the last 100 days. And when I look to the next 100 days, there is opportunity. Despite all of these difficulties, I still have to get on with the job. And I've visited now over 40 schools. I've engaged at the front line. I see the good work. I hear the kind of issues that principals and teachers want me to support them with. And we are taking that forward and we are delivering. And one of the other important things, Stephen, we just announced yesterday the childcare strategy, £25 million.
I saw Michelle O'Neill was talking about that and how she's worked hard to achieve that.
Well, I have worked across different departments and they have supported me in taking this forward. I did have to make the case, Stephen, quite strongly in the executive for the £25 million so that I could secure that, because obviously other departments had very significant financial challenges. And so I secured the £25 million. That was something I had to get over the line within the executive. And then we got on and delivered that. And I announced it yesterday. Hardworking parents being supported through me as minister. And that will help meet their costs.
One parent, she was called Risa Ballatino, she says that she spends twice as much on full-time childcare for her two-year-old daughter as she does on her mortgage. And she says that this move is not enough. Have a wee listen to this.
We don't have any room for like accidents, for unexpected spending, for holidays. So everything goes for childcare. And we also don't have any room, for example, for another child, which is not in the plans right now. thankfully. But even if it was or when it is, it's only after our daughter is in school because we can't afford it.
That's from that parent.
Yeah,
you've just said to me that you want to talk about schools.
Well, I hear the message from parents, and that's why we responded. And what we have been able to do is add to the 20% Childcare Allowance, which is a UK-wide scheme, and provide a Northern Ireland subsidy of a further 15%. So where a parent has children, two children in full-time care, that now in Northern Ireland will lead to an £8,000 reduction. So would I like to do more? Yes, I would. But now we've started the journey to do that.
You intimated there you want to talk about new schools. Are you building a significant number of new schools? Are you starting that process? Well, and where are you getting the money from?
The schools issue is partly tied into the childcare because I want to step up the provision in our nursery schools, and that will require enhanced capacity. But we have already announced some new special schools, Knockavon, Sperrinview, vitally important that we meet the needs. And I'm reviewing all 39 special schools. And if they need enhancement, then I will be providing the funding to enhance those new schools. So I've already announced a capital programme there. And now I hope to look at some new schools which are ready to go into a procurement phase.
How many?
Well, we're looking at a number of them, and it'll be across the various sectors within Northern Ireland when it comes to those schools, because I support every sector: integrated, Irish medium, controlled, maintained, voluntary grammar. And I'm looking at how I can support all of them. So I would hope that I will be able to move forward a number of new school bills within this financial year.
I guess the cynic would say, are you all talk? You talked about, you know, your next 100 days. Have you delivered in your first 100 days?
Well, I think I've outlined teachers' dispute resolved, new recruits from 24,000 now 30,000. Teachers are getting a significant uplift in their pay. I look at the childcare strategy, £25 million delivered. I look at some of our shared education programmes. I'm taking them forward. I secured £150 million of Fresh Start funding to take forward a significant shared campus scheme. So I have already delivered. I hit the ground running. Yes, there are challenges, but I'm still getting on with the job, engaging with the teachers and working with the unions to support them as well. So, you know, I didn't have time to wait when I came in. There was no honeymoon period for me. There was a job of work to get on with.
Well, you chose to when to come in. Your party decided to go back in without securing the funding that you needed for Northern Ireland.
Well, we did secure funding. But the party also made education its number one priority. It was our first pick, and we have been delivering on a range of issues, and I'll continue to do that. Even with the difficult challenges, I'm a champion for education and I will fight hard for it.
Minister, I hope you come back. Thank you very much indeed. Thank you, Paul Gibbon. In that interview that we've just heard, and I said at the top of the programme, look, absolutely, there is a general election that's on, but business continues in Northern Ireland about all of those different topic areas, all of those different issues that affect your daily lives. So the Education Minister, Paul Gibbon, announcing on this programme this morning that services like youth services and mental health counselling for children are at risk if he doesn't give, if he doesn't get the money that he wants. He has also announced this morning, and this is a big debating point obviously, about school uniforms. He has announced that he will be now considering putting a legal cap on the cost of a school uniform in Northern Ireland. That would set Northern Ireland apart from the Republic of Ireland and anywhere else in the UK. Is that the way to go? 03030 80 55 55. And he has called for the educational school support workers to call off their strike next month. So lots in that interview. Listening to it, Kate Nicol, who's education spokesperson for the Alliance Party. Good morning to you, Kate.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm actually childcare and early years spokesperson. My colleague, Nick Matheson.
Sorry, Kate. My fault. Before we speak to you, let's just hear what the First Minister, Sinn Féin's Michelle O'Neill, Kate, has been saying about transforming childcare as a day one priority for the executive.
Today the executive has agreed an initial £25 million investment in childcare. This is the start of us delivering on our promise to make childcare more affordable for parents, to support struggling providers and to create more places for children with additional needs. Transforming childcare was a day one priority for me and for the entire executive. And whilst there's much more work to do in the time ahead, today is a positive step in the right direction. Families need and deserve our support, and I am determined to keep working with all parties to reduce the bills for parents, to finance providers and ensure services are accessible to all.
So Sinn Féin were offered to come on to the programme and talk to you about children, talk to you about all of those educational policies, and obviously they are choosing not to do that. So Kate, if we walk through some of the issues that have come up there, youth services, mental health counselling, at risk.
Oh, yeah, I mean, there's so much that was that was discussed there. It was a really fulsome discussion, and I have so many thoughts. I guess my first instinct is early intervention is going to be decimated if there are cuts to youth services, the action on mental health. So for us as a party, and something we're really trying to push through the education committee, is a focus on transformation. You talked about pay and grading. We talked about SEN.
Well, when we talk about that early learning childcare, I noticed that the minister said that he had to fight for that 25 million. Did your party support it in the executive?
Oh, yeah, we did. We absolutely supported it. And I want to give credit to Paul Given on the issue of childcare. I think there are, I have issues with some of the other things he's done, but in terms of this announcement yesterday, there is some really good work within it. I have some reservations about parts of it, but I think he has been quite innovative with the 25 million. We know that to roll out the universal childcare that is required, that's going to take hundreds of millions. So he's done some good work it, and I think the subsidy scheme is great.
So to be clear, Kate, you're saying that your party did not, behind the scenes of executive meetings, suggest that that 25 million would be better spent in other departments?
No, my party absolutely supports childcare as a key priority.
Well, of course you support childcare, but specifically about the 25 million.
Yeah,
did your party suggest that money should be spent in other departments rather than where it's now gone?
No. Our party completely supports it. We only had issue with preschool being included in the childcare package. We think that there should have been work being done already by the department. It had already been announced that there was standardisation of preschool. Preschool is not childcare. So that was one issue that our ministers raised, was the inclusion of that within the package. But we absolutely support this investment. We know that early intervention is key. We know that parents and providers are on their knees. And there is a lot within this that is really to be welcomed. And I commend his inclusion of a subsidy scheme and the hope to roll it out within September. I think that is really something to be welcome.
In terms of school uniform, big debate across Northern Ireland, the minister moving to consider putting guidance into statutory form so that schools are legally required. It's not following guidance, legally required to ensure what will be stipulated in that legislation. And that might include a financial cap on the cost of a school uniform. Would the Alliance Party support or oppose that?
We support it. My colleague Nick Matheson is actually planning to bring a private member's legislation on this if the department don't. It's something that we're passionate about. I personally remember buying my blazer from a charity shop and being quite ashamed and embarrassed of it. And so it's something that I think is so important that we need to address. I guess one thing that we would say is that why has it taken so long? Officials have been looking at this for ages. You talked yourself about how you've been raising this since, you know, you were
at City Beat 25 years ago.
I nearly said Cool FM at City Beat. So it's something that really impacts people. And I mean, there are arguments of discussions about uniform all the time. I think it's an equalizer, yeah. But I think the branding is outrageous. No child should have to have Canterbury or whatever PE kit. So it definitely needs to be looked at.
Although those schools that argue for it say that it is better quality, it lasts longer, and therefore it is more efficient for parents to be buying it.
No, it's rubbish. I mean, there's no justification for it. I'm still traumatised when I think of the smell of my woolen blazer, and there's no need for that cost. Yes, let's have uniforms, but let's make it affordable. There's a cost of living crisis, and it's putting unnecessary pressure on families. And there are certain schools that really need to look at this and change outdated notions about what a school uniform should be like. It should be practical, it should be comfortable, and it should be affordable.
So you would support a legal cap?
Yes, and he said that when Sinn Féin brought that motion to that we had a debate on it, and he said this is something he's looking into. We know that, you know, the guidance so far isn't working, so something needs to be looked at. Again, why has it taken so long? Officials have been looking at this, and...
we've just lost Kate off the line there. The SLP MP Claire Hanna has welcomed the news that some parents in Northern Ireland will get help with their childcare bills, says it's a big breakthrough for parents.
We've been hearing very clearly from parents they need help with childcare bills right now, alongside longer-term reform of childcare. I've been pressing the Treasury alongside Gavin Robinson, MP, on the tax-free childcare element, but working with melted parents, we've been able to reframe the conversation and come to the Education Minister with real solutions. This is a victory for parent power. Families who shared their stories, who contacted politicians, who joined the march, have been able to show that collaboration and creativity works. Politics is supposed to be about improving people's lives and solving problems and working together. It doesn't always seem that way, but hopefully we've been able to do a bit of that today.
And here's Robbie Butler from the Ulster Unionist Party.
But I would also like to remind the House that the recent independent review of education has once more offered us the chance to pursue the goal of a single education system where children of all religions, social and ethnic backgrounds, disability or ability, academically or vocationally talented will feel welcome and, more importantly, included.
So what do you reckon then? 030 30 80 55 55 is the number to call this morning. In terms of that school cap, Sinn Féin had proposed that earlier in the year as well, a financial cap on a school uniform. Is that the state dictating to you what you can buy, where you can buy it? I guess in part they do that already, don't they? So we'll hear from parents this morning. We'll hear from school principals this morning as well. 030 30 80 55 55 is the number to call today. Classroom assistants were mentioned in that interview with the minister. Bus drivers, canteen staff all promised a pay award back dated to April 2022. The deal was done. They haven't got their money. How outrageous is that? Brendan has been down to the home of Colette and Alan, whose four-year-old son, Cohen, has special educational needs. Cohen has not been able to attend school since Monday due to the strikes taking place and no bus available.
It's another early start in the Hilland household as Dad Alan and Mum Colette get the kids ready for school. But while it's lessons as normal for Ava Lilly and Jamie, their younger brother, Cohen won't be going today. The strikes this week means his special needs school won't be opening.
So Colette, just tell me how this affects you so much. I mean, the strikes are happening. Here you are at home with Cohen. Just how much of an impact has it had on you?
It has a massive impact on my family. He sees his siblings going out to school in the morning. And as much as he's non-verbal, he's not silly. He knows when his siblings go out to school in the morning, that's the time that he then gets his breakfast, he gets his uniform on. And whenever that doesn't happen, he's very much out of sorts. Like, I'm not saying it's okay for mainstream to be off, but if my mainstream children are off, they can play out in the street. They can sit and colour in. They can watch a tablet. Cohen can't do any of that. Cohen can't play out the front. He can't sit on his own and entertain himself. It's just not something that he can do.
And you said he goes into... He goes into an overdrive when he's out of his routine.
Oh, very much so.
So this week particularly, that will be the case?
Oh, absolutely. Even not settling now, this wouldn't typically be him. He can usually amuse himself in the house, but he's very much out of sorts. It does really have a big
impact. Because like anybody, we all want routine, you know.
Yeah, and that's the thing with a lot of special needs kids, are very much routine orientated. And I'm winging this whole SEND process myself. He's my fourth child, but my first with special needs. So I'm not trained in how to deal with situations that arise with him.
Give me a typical day for Cohen on a normal day.
In school, he is an angel. He has no problems. He absolutely loves school. His teachers are absolutely amazing. So that's the only social setting he actually really likes. So again, for him to not have it is just another nightmare for him, really.
Those people behind these strikes, they're bus drivers, they're classroom assistants, they're you know, support staff within the school system.
Yeah.
They obviously don't want to be doing this.
Oh, no. And one thing I want to get across is I fully support what these support workers are doing. They are, sorry for the noise, they are worth their weight in gold with these children. His taxi driver, his classroom assistant, they are so underfunded, it's unreal. For 10 children, they're not even getting the qualified classroom assistants because the salary is so low. So the people who have actually done the training aren't even the classroom assistants they're getting. They're just getting ordinary classroom assistants who are having to deal with children like Cohen who aren't potty trained, who can lash out, who can have self-harming behaviours because he would hit himself and headbutt the floor and stuff if he gets frustrated. They're having to deal with all of that. So my frustration is not with those support workers. I'm fully behind them and I really hope that this strike action works because they deserve it.
Right, so Kate Nicol has just dropped off again. We have her here. Here she is back again. Good morning to you, Kate.
Morning, sorry about that.
Good morning. I think you're having problems with your internet this morning, right?
Nightmare, yep.
So Paul was talking there, asking the minister, Paul Given, was appealing to those educational support workers who are on strike to come off strike next month. Do you agree with them? Would you call for them to come off strike?
I'm not going to call for that because I've met with these workers and I know how desperate they are. I support the right to strike. I would say that all parties need to keep talking to avoid the impact on children. And I've been speaking to parents as well who this is so unsettling and the impact it has on their children, especially children who, you know, have come through COVID and the impact that has happened on them is significant. So it's not an easy one, Stephen. It's deeply disappointing
difficult
that money wasn't included in the budget.
But
it's now up to the minister to address it.
Well, but it's up to you as a political party to have a view on it. Are you calling for those people planning to strike next month to call off the strike?
No, I'm not. They have a right to strike. But I'm calling on the minister to really do what he can to set out how he's going to ensure they get their money. And you speak to the parents. You know, the majority of the parents, they recognise that the staff are so important to their children's well-being. They deserve to be paid properly. I don't want to pit workers against children. I think that's wrong. If the minister isn't able to get the money from the Treasury, then it's up to him to set out how he's going to address this. Well, the buck ultimately stops with him.
So, but your party, where do you think he should take the money from?
Well, we've looked at a number of things. I mean, there are areas around transformation, obviously, is one. We have been very open about our issues with the money that has been allocated to SRUAL and how that's 150 million. We suggested he could potentially look at reallocating that, seeing the Treasury would reallocate that to resource to help with that. So we put forward some suggestions for him to look at, but ultimately the buck stops with him. It's up to him. So if he's not able to get the money from the Treasury, then he needs to find out how he's going to do that within his budget.
So would your party be supporting him getting extra money out of that June monitoring round that's coming up where we're speculating there's a couple of hundred million up for grabs? How much of it would you give to him?
We haven't looked at the detail yet, and that's something that our finance people are really looking into detail. The issue is that there is not very much money. We know that within the budget. Education did get the second largest amount. So there is scope within that to spend it. There is room for transformation. And really, we want to see plans coming forward. We know the reality of the financial situation is not great. So what is he doing to transform the services? What is his plan to reform SEN, to reform the EA, to address the school estate? He needs to come up with a plan. And as members of the Education Committee, we're going to be scrutinizing that. But we're also there to support him and make sure that our children have access to what they need. But SEN is in crisis, and the department hasn't recognised that so far. You know, they won't use that terminology, but it is.
One of the key talking points, I reckon, out of that interview with the minister this morning was he was referring to schools in Northern Ireland, a number of schools in Northern Ireland that have surpluses, that are sitting on money that they're not spending. And because of how it is worked out, that will often be or sometimes be schools in deprived areas because the formula of free school meals is linked to how much a school will get. Schools sitting in deprived areas with children that need help and they're not spending their money for that given year.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. And he announced something that I hadn't heard him say before, that there'd be a review of the coming funding formula for schools. That I think that's a new commitment. So I thought that was really interesting. And that is something that we'll definitely be looking at in a bit more detail within the Education Committee and asking more questions around.
Okay, Kate, thank you very much indeed. Mary and Derry Lynn. Morning, Mary.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning.
Yes, I've been listening to your programme with regard to parents' concern school uniforms. Now, I would like to put forward the point that charity shops at present, well, the charity shop that I volunteer in and manage here in a rural village in Fonanna, proceeds of which all go towards a learning disability home in Lisnaskee. Now, at present, we have a wide range of school uniforms which cater for all the schools in the local area and further afield as well.
So you're talking here about, what's the term, second-hand school uniforms?
Yes.
Pre-loved,
yes,
it's called.
Yes, second-hand school uniforms which have been handed in by parents belonging to their children who are no longer require them or who have gone on to a bigger size or whatever. They are in perfect condition. And there, I can't see any reason why parents cannot see this, that they can purchase these at a minimal price and at the same time be contributing to a very worthwhile cause.
Mary, thank you. Mary, thank you. Kathleen O'Hare, former school principal with us today. Morning, Kathleen.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. So the minister announcing consulting towards a statutory footing for requirements around school uniforms, including the possibility of a financial cap on the cost of it and the PE gear.
I would really welcome that, Stephen, as long as it doesn't take up legislative time in the Northern Ireland Assembly. Because as we just heard from the previous speaker, the other important issues like special needs, etc. I mean, I think he can give a stronger form of guidance to schools and ensure that that is adhered. Because we do have an inspectorate that do look at the state of the school, and he could just add on to that school uniform and price of school uniform. Because when the inspectorate are out in a school, they meet with parents as well as teachers and pupils. So he could do something without tying up time on the floor of the Northern Ireland Assembly for this.
But we've seen it. We've seen, Kathleen, for many, many years, the guidance is there and some schools just haven't adhered to it. Why is that, do you think?
Because it hasn't been inspected. It hasn't been, you know, I can't remember the last time I've seen something like school uniform on a school inspection. But, I mean, schools are regularly inspected. And if that was on the inspection framework for schools, then I think that's all you'd need to do to change things.
But I guess
parent power is so important to schools these days that parents do need a say in this. And I think equally, if you dumb down a uniform too much, that it's no longer uniform, you will also have complaints from parents. So it might be, you know, it might be hard to find a real solution to this.
But I guess that what I'm trying to ask is, if the guidance has been there from ministers before Paul, it's there, why do the schools not have the moral compass to adhere to it?
I think, Stephen, it's a wee bit unfair because lots of schools have.
No,
and I can
why
tell
do some
you that
not?
Lots of schools, well, some don't simply because of the makeup of the children of their schools. And I think you have not named but referred to a few of those that have a high percentage of people who are not on free school meals. Those type of schools sometimes, you know, are run on different reasons. So therefore, if you are from a less affluent background, then you find it difficult to survive in that school. And to be honest, that might suit some schools, and I criticise them greatly for that. But I think most schools, particularly with a high percentage of children in free school meals, have already been down this tried and tested route and do have affordable uniforms.
Look, I don't want to be pejorative about it. I'm not expressing an opinion about it because there are reasons. But I was shocked today to hear the minister talk about schools in deprived areas sitting on a surplus for year after year. Now, is that because they are saving up for a rainy day when they're worried about cuts or they're worried about unexpected costs of a ceiling in the school falling in? Is that why they're doing it, or what's
Stephen,
going on?
I've been principal of two schools, and you know, sometimes they've been in deficit and sometimes they've been in surplus, simply because the minister has decided to give a temporary variation of maybe, you know, 20 or 30 extra students to that school a year, which meant an extra 100,000. Now, if you're going to employ a member of staff, you have to change your curriculum. You can't do that simply reactively. The only thing you can really do with that spend is buy, you know, large bits of equipment like IT equipment. And I know I've been in the situation of having to have a surplus, but that was a planned surplus, and you're allowed to have a certain percentage of planned surplus, because I knew we were getting a new IT suite, and I knew that that would cost 100,000 to fit out. So sometimes you can't spend all that money in a year, particularly if you get extra children.
No, I get that.
But it's a planned spend.
Yeah, but if it's not a planned spend, and a school can't designate a project against the amount of money that's piling up, is there something wrong?
Well, there is something wrong in the situation, maybe with the planning, maybe with the curricular plan. But if you've over a certain percentage, it was either 2.5%, 3%, 4% of a surplus, then that money had to go back. You know, so that is the situation. But I think if schools regularly have a huge overspend, yes, they're not spending the money where it needs to be spent.
Kathleen, thank you. The commentator, Newton Emerson, with us this morning. Morning, Newton.
Good morning.
Good morning. What do you make of this announcement by the minister that he's going to seek to put this guidance on a statutory footing and consider a financial cap on a school uniform?
I think it's an odd way of solving or addressing this problem, because it's going to be very complicated. You're going to have to continually update it for inflation. There are going to be certain circumstances where it won't work. There's a much simpler approach to take, which is just to ban, you know, branded uniforms and restricted suppliers, and particularly, you know, expensive items like woolen blazers and PE kits of a certain colour, and all these things are in the guidelines. And making those statutory, yes, that should solve the problem in itself. But I think there needs to be a real crackdown on that, and then the cap won't be necessary. It should be a confusion. There's no need for parents to be spending any more money than an off-the-peg uniform cost in a supermarket, and there's certainly no reason for schools or Stormont to be chipping in to subsidise the handful of shops that, for some bizarre reason, have these arrangements with grammar schools.
Do you think the big schools will resist this, lobby against it?
Yes,
what do you think we're facing here? Why?
Well, they will, because they believe that they're a law unto themselves. You only need to look at how they've behaved over the abolition of academic selection, or rather the selection test, which was announced over 20 years ago now and has been official policy for 16 years. Schools have, a handful of schools, a small number of schools, have simply done whatever they like. They have defied the department on that, just as they've completely defied the guidance on uniforms. They believe that they can do whatever they like. It's extremely arrogant. It's an irony of our grammar schools that they talk about this great grammar ethos, which appears to be ignore the rules and do what you want. That's not a great model to send to children. So I think that there'll be real pushback against it. And that Stormont's going to need to take that on. And I don't have much confidence about that, frankly, because they've been so weak about it for years. And I think that the DUP in particular, and we'll see this from this minister, who, you know, I don't know exactly his track record on this, to be honest with you, because he hasn't got one. But we'll see with this minister if he's prepared to take this on, because the DUP has proven to be rather craven to our grammar schools. Let's face it, they're a little bit in awe of them, for, I think, unjustified reasons.
Well, if he's announcing it, Newton, and he's saying he's contemplating it, why would he do that if he wasn't intent on seriously considering it?
Well, absolutely, yes. Let's see. The executive has been under pressure to do this, including from DUP voters, since really the energy crisis took off about 3 years ago. it has become just unsustainable for many parents. The PE uniform issue in particular, that this fashion for highly expensive branded PE uniforms has just pushed people, even if you're quite committed to buying good uniforms for the children, right over the top. So the DUP is under some pressure. I wouldn't put the party past making announcements and still nothing happening. It did happen before.
Newton Emerson, thank you very much indeed. Now, Next Translink has confirmed that rail and bus fares are set to rise. The majority of passengers will see their fares increase by 6% on buses, 10% on rail. This means most Metro Glider bus, cash singles will increase by 10p. Most Ulster Bus and Go Liner cash singles will increase between 10 and 50p. Depending on distance, most rail cash singles will increase 20p and £1.50, depending on distance. It follows a decision by the Department for Infrastructure to revise fares. Phil Kelly, the commentator, is with us. Belfast Telegraph Night Editor John Laverty with us. Morning, Phil.
Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, John. Morning, Phil. Morning, John.
Morning, Stephen.
Good morning. Good morning. Well, is this avoidable, Phil, in the current climate?
Well, as always, and you say current climate, we'll get to that. Whether locally or nationally, the debate around funding services is always kind of focused downward by squeezing ordinary citizens and customers for more money that they don't really have. But, you know, one of the main drivers of both environmental and economic benefits is the delivery of world-class integrated public transport. And something we must understand immediately is that ticket sales to passengers do not and cannot fund such a system. Equally, raising travel prices is absolutely the wrong direction of travel.
Well, do you think 10p is going to put anybody's lights out?
Yeah, well, you know, you can say that, but we're constantly framing these things within the cost of living crisis, you know, where everything is going up. But what we're seeing is this is the complete opposite of international trends, where more countries who are really serious about delivering that world-class public transport and reaping the benefits of it are either reducing costs or they're moving even further towards free travel. So cities and countries around the world, like Spain, Germany, Italy, Luxembourg, Estonia, they're all prioritising huge reductions to public transport travel or removing the cost entirely. Now, one of the things that has...
Well, they're reducing it because they have the money to reduce it. You know, every day in this programme, we're talking, just the Education Minister this morning, talking about how he's in hundreds of millions of pounds of an overspend. So, yep. John Laverty, what's the reality here?
Morning, Stephen. The reality is that for as long as I can remember, Translink has been living a hand-to-mouth existence. I mean, it's only last month they said that their shortfall for this year is 17 million. I've never known a company that works this way. It's forever trying to claw back the money it's shortfalls, and this year is no different.
But if you're putting a rail fare up by £1.50 a pop, that's a lot if people are regularly using that journey.
Yeah, it is, but I mean the only way around it is to get the Department of Infrastructure to fund that themselves. I mean, they've poured billions into this company over the last 10, 12 years. So this is Translink trying to claw back some of the money themselves, and using the passengers and the travellers to do it. And it's the only way they can stay active, because every year it's the same, Stephen. Every year they're coming cap in hand to Stormont, you know, need more money, and this whole program today is based on the same theme. You know, we need more money. We need more money from Stormont. Stormont needs more money from the Treasury, and unless they get it, things aren't going to change.
Stephen, can I just deal with this notion of a lack of money? And we constantly hear this really horrible phrase about services, whether it be health or education or public transport, coming cap in hand, looking for more money. One of the big things that Translink cited as a reason why it had to increase fares was rising fuel prices and the so-called energy crisis. Now, what we saw in respect to the energy crisis as it was framed was households were paying more to heat their homes. car drivers and public transport companies were paying more for fuel and passing that cost on to passengers. But the reality of this so-called energy crisis was it was a profits bonanza for oil and the oil and gas industry. In 2022, we saw record profits for all five Western oil and gas majors. The five largest together had a total profits of $195 billion in 2022, which was nearly 120% more than the previous year. That's the highest level in industry history. So we are not serious about dealing with public transport when we talk about should customers, should passengers pay a pound a mile more or whatever. We need a government that actually says we are going to solve crises by going where we need to go to get money, not from ordinary, hard-pressed, stretched taxpayers and citizens. I mean, having an argument about raising fares on public transport, which is something we want more people to be using, while we are allowing ourselves to be robbed by major corporations to the tune that I've just cited, is ridiculous. And that's why we need to change the conversation. We need to go after those who are effectively stealing the wealth and sucking our country dry.
Declan. Morning, Declan. Thanks for calling us.
Hi, Dan, Stephen.
Go ahead.
Yeah, Stephen, I'm a regular user on Translink.
Buses.
Well, metro buses going up the west. Usually about 4 o'clock when we were going home. The 10H that's going up the Falls Road, up the Glen Road, down the Suffolk Road, or the 10B that goes up through Anderson's Town that goes up the Shores Road, gets cancelled. Now, you go on their app, it'll just say it's cancelled. It doesn't tell you the reason why. And I'll give you a wee internet.
Is it How regular?
It's quite regular. It is quite regular.
All right.
I've rang and complained a couple of times to Translink. I'll tell you about the last incident, Stephen. It was about 4:10, and it was teaming out of Heavens down in Queen Street. We had 3 stops there, and there was wee pants and they're sitting on the seats below the shelter. The shelters were leaking. They're that bad. So they are. And I made a complaint to them about what had happened. And, usually you get the, I'm sorry about this here, blah, blah, blah. So it is. But a week or so later, I seen them coming in to change one of the shelters, which was the bottom of the fee. Now, they haven't changed the rest of them or done anything else to them. So it is. Not only that, the service in Queen Street, I think it's appalling because they don't have a digital service there like they do around the City Hall or anywhere else in the town that will tell you when the next bus is going out.
I must try to get the stats, Declan, because they will exist.
Yeah, I have a record. I've rang them.
The punctuality of the service from Translink between the buses and the trains, and then if there are certain routes which frequently.
I agree with John Lavery. I don't believe that they're that bad that they have to hike up the prices. I don't. About a year or two ago, they put the prices up. If you went on and done their weekly app, it would have cost you £15. Then they put up to £16, and I when they put this price hike up, it'd be up to £17 again.
And will that
what's going to happen next year? Are they going to do the same again?
And will that price hike, Declan, put you off? Will it affect you much?
No, I can't because I have to use it, so do. Yeah. I don't have a car, I don't have a license, you know what I mean? So I use it to go to work. And you were talking about strikes or not, Stephen.
Yeah.
See, before Christmas, I had to take 3 days off because I couldn't go to work because of the Translink strike. I know it's nothing to do with Translink, but just talking about that in general. So, yeah.
Declan, thank you. Fred in Lisburn. Morning, Fred.
Good morning, Stephen. I'm coming from a similar line. How can they cut services? How can they say that they're doing this and doing that for services? The last bus leaves Lisburn on a Saturday night for Belfast. Now, I'm talking about the bus. The last bus leaving Lisburn for Belfast on a Saturday night is 8:15 in the evening. The station itself, the bus station, which only opened in 2009 in Lisburn, is closed on a Sunday. Come winter, summer, whatever the conditions are here, you're forced to stand outside if you need a bus on a Sunday under a leaky shelter. In dark nights, very little light to even see a timetable. The unions kick up every time something's proposed, the likes of night buses or buses to improve services.
Are we at the point here, John Laverty, if you listen to a couple of callers we have had on, obviously it's just anecdotal, if the service gets a lot better, people will be complaining less about the increases? Is it the service or is it the price?
Well, the service is only going to get better if there's money to fund it. I mean, TransLink have over 4,000 staff. They've been hit with strikes recently. They're not one of the big public companies that Phil was mentioning earlier, you know, but private companies, and investment, when you look at what's happened to transport in England, you know, it hasn't worked out very well for them. And the only thing that can help TransLink is further investment, and we're talking massive investment here, because, like I say, they're just running to standstill at the minute. I mean, again, another thing they do, Stephen, is the free transport to people over 60, but under 65, I don't understand that. I don't understand why, if you're still working and you're not retired, and you're not a pensioner, you're getting free transport from
here. We're talking about the free bus passes now for the pensioners. What's this kick off? Nigel and Castle Welland?
Not the pensioners. Before you get to pension age. When you hit 60, you're entitled to a bus pass.
60, I see.
I cannot understand that. Nigel? Thousands of people are getting free transport.
Nigel and Castle Welland. Morning, Nigel.
No, morning. No, John has just made the point I was going to make. Now, I'm going to be very cautious about saying that, oh, it's a small increase and people can afford to pay it. I don't use public transport every day living out in the country. The service is quite poor. So people that do use it every day, there's extra money they're going to have to pay. But I think there's an argument to totally overhaul public transport in Northern Ireland. We need to have more of it, and it needs to be better. But until we get to that, the point I was going to make, and John made it, we have TransLink raising prices, but at the same time, we've government taking the decision to subsidise free public transport for the wealthy, one of the wealthiest sections of society, i.e. those people aged 60 and over who are still in work. And to me, that is a regressive, that is very regressive, and in fact, we could be using that money better.
If the free bus passes were cancelled and people only got a free bus pass if they genuinely couldn't afford at older age, and that money was pumped into TransLink, would you support that?
Yes, I actually think I would look for a more progressive approach to the provision of free public transport in Scotland. I believe it's to young people. So there's a better argument to invest in young people, to encourage uptake, okay, people that are more likely to use it throughout their life, to get to work, to study and so on. But subsidising people who are in work, or the people who have accumulated wealth, to have free public transport and not providing that to other people is totally iniquitous to me.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, John. Thank you, Phil. Thank you, Nigel. 03030805555. Don't forget, if you've got a story, nolan@bbc.co.uk. Willie got in touch with us after he saw me in town last week. I think he's a little bit of a problem with my dress sense.
Well, I was driving down, I was in Belfast the other day on Tuesday.
Yes.
And maybe it was Monday. I think it was Monday.
Look, who cares whether it was Monday or Tuesday? Get to the point.
Anyway, I was driving down Great Victoria Street and I looked over at the Crown Bar and I spied this. I thought it was a homeless man standing talking to a blonde haired lady. Outside the Crown Bar.
That was me. I was going to get my hair cut.
And he had an old T-shirt on him, boy, with an old no collar on it.
That's my new T-shirt.
And an old pair of shorts on him, like cut-off pajama bottoms.
Were those shorts too high for you?
Oh, they were desperate looking, boy. I thought you were home. I only rang in to
Were they too high for you, those shorts?
No, they were just...
Were they a wee bit sexy?
Silly, no, we were just a bit. I thought this man needs help. I was going to see, would I send you a few pounds to get you a nice shirt with a collar on it and a pair of tailored shorts? Well, at least look the part.
Well, the answer to that would be yes, please. If you would like to send me money, I'll bring down a bucket.
Well, I don't know. Does your mummy know you're out like that, boy?
And my mother's going to be very upset with this. She sometimes challenges my clothes. I can't look good in clothes.
Well, I have to say, you don't look good in that, in the ones you're on Tuesday.
Thank you very much. So what were the... I had my wee white shorts on. My white shorts on, and I had a wee tight... was it a blue top I had on?
It was a nice thing with no collar on it. It was hanging on you. I thought to myself, God, that couldn't be Stephen Nolan related to the Royal School.
The Royal Belfast Academical Institution.
Correct.
Ancient and loyal.
I wouldn't walk up past 1A Malone Road like that.
Great is thy name. We thy sons true am. You wouldn't walk up the Malone Road like that?
1A Malone Road.
I see.
1A.
You see, I'll tell you what's interesting about what you're saying.
That's Methody's postal address.
Oh, is it?
Yes.
Methody. Can I, here's the interesting part of the conversation, right?
Yeah.
I'd love to look well in clothes. I can't. No, clothes hang in me and they don't look good in me and they never have.
A nice pair of tailored shorts and a shirt with a collar on it, like a golfing shirt. No logo or anything on it.
Do you know who looks well in clothes? Your man on Gamoo, Buckler. he's a wee pretty boy. And your man, Taggart. Taggart runs around with wee kind of prim shirts on. But, you walk past Taggart in the corridor, right, Joel Taggart?
Yep.
And I swear to you, the smell of brute aftershave, right?
Oh, for God's sake.
Right? So he's got his wee shirt on, and the brute just hits you when you're in a corridor, and you think, my goodness, that man smells lovely. and then Crothers. You're talking about me walking around in a shirt. Crothers has a cravat on.
Oh, yes, of course.
Summer or winter.
Boy, Mark Simpson? He'd be running about.
Simpson, I've contemplated putting in a number of complaints to the BBC because you'll find Simpson in here in Lycra.
Aye, he's one of them.
It's
boys.
Just not to be. It's not to be tolerated. Quite honestly, but I can't compete with these people. So
you cannot compete. You're giving up.
But I can't, honest to goodness, Willie. You've got all of these pretty boy presenters, and they're all well groomed and well dressed, and smell of
brute.
Well, Taggart's brute, and your man Buckler is, what do you call that stuff?
Boss.
Oh, he's into all his brands.
Tang.
He's into his brands.
Oh, for God!
So you walk past Buckler, and it's like some type of. Do you know what I mean? All of this expensive brands all over the place. And I just can't compete. So I can't look like them.
Tell me this. How is your mother?
My mother's doing fine. My mother will be genuinely upset with this because she's constantly telling me to dress better. I don't know. Do you think it's important?
Well, for a man in your position and your obvious wealth, I would say it would be.
Why?
Well, I think you've got to look the part as well as being the part.
But and I would love to look better, right?
But you do. You can.
But if you are, right?
Yep.
So I've never looked well. And I've done all right in the BBC. I've spent, 30 years now in the media. I'm paid pretty well. So do you have to, do you have to be prim, proper, dressed in that conventional way to do well?
Oh, no, not at all. But I felt sorry for you till I saw who you were.
It's really interesting.
Get yourself a nice shirt with a collar on it and get a nice pair of tailored shorts and... I think you had goodies on you.
Yes, I did.
You want to get rid of the goodies, boy.
Well, I run around the BBC with no shoes on.
I see. Could be worse.
So I don't know. I don't know. I do think, and I'd love to hear from you all today, 030-30-80-55-55. I would love to hear from you as to whether being dressed in that, and I'm not being disparaging about anybody else, but being dressed in that conventional, really well-suited, well-groomed way, does that make you more prone to being successful? Do people look upon you in a better way?
I don't think so, but you could upgrade it one wee bit. You could at least have a shirt with a collar on it, for goodness sake.
Yeah. Or, can I give you the counter-argument?
Go ahead.
And look, you're probably right, by the way, right? But here's the counter-argument. I go out onto the street. Everybody talks to me. There's no barriers.
Oh, not at all. People
ring the program, and they certainly don't think that I'm better than anybody else. In fact, maybe the opposite.
In this country, I don't think you get away with it.
No, maybe the opposite. So maybe, just maybe, you know, the fat, dishevelled guy, maybe it just makes me more accessible. I don't know. Will I try a wee bit?
I would think you should just a wee bit get yourself a nice shirt. Now, you had a nice shirt on last night.
On the telly?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I tried to put a suit on, like.
I know, but you at least looked a bit better.
Yes.
I was just concerned that people would think you were homeless.
Right. No,
the way you appeared the other day. It was terrible.
I've got a nice home.
I know you have.
Here, I've enjoyed talking. By the way, what are you wearing, Mr. Golden Balls?
I'm wearing a nice tailored T-shirt and a pair of shorts.
Send me a picture. And I'll put it out on Twitter and I'll get everybody to rate you.
Oh, I don't like it. I'm not on Twitter. I'm on another book face.
All right, are you? Okay. Here, do you listen to the program often?
I do, of course.
Good man. And thank you for doing so. All right.
No, thank you, Steve. Thanks a lot. Look after yourself. So.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye. Yeah.
I liked him, actually, by the end of the interview. Right. I'm exhausted this morning. And guess what? I'll see you on 5 Live tonight at 10 o'clock at the other side of the day. See you tonight. See you Saturday night. See you Sunday night. See you back here. BBC Radio Ulster at 9 a.m. for the biggest show in the country. Have a good day. Have a good weekend. And thanks for listening this week.
The biggest show in the country. Listen again on BBC Sounds. Tweet at Stephen Nolan.
Hey guys, I'm Nadia.
And I'm Shabazz. We're just popping up with some essential news.
The brand new series of Doctor Who has begun.
And that means the official Doctor Who podcast is here.
Whether you're a Whovian or a Nuvian, you are so welcome. This is the place where we dissect every episode, explain all the Easter eggs, and bring you some exclusive content too.
Plus, we'll have fabulous special guests and Doctor Who mega fans.
So come and find us. It's the official Doctor Who podcast.
Listen wherever you get your BBC podcasts.